arranged marriage, you don't have, you have zero expectations. Improve his potency and powers. You don't go out by yourself.
Misogyny?
It's crazy sex.
Kama Sutra coming from India. Hi everyone, welcome to the Old Collective Just Like You podcast. We're Diana, Wakesy, Simona, and Eden. And we're all about intimate wellness and pleasure. In this podcast, we share insights from modern third culture kids on relationships, sex, and intimacy to help you navigate your way through life. Today, we have the honor to talk to Sheeta. Sheeta was born in India, but has lived across 11 cities around the world. As a Harvard graduate, she started her career first in consulting, worked at Nike, founded her own female health startup in India, and is back into consulting again. Next to this impressive college and career track, Sheeta is also a certified yoga instructor and all about health and wellness.
Today, we'll talk about the best kept Indian secrets to live a long and prosperous intimate life, what arranged marriages are underrated, and what she learned about female health and wellness from running her own female wellness business in India.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am doing good. How are you guys? It's so good to see you after forever.
Yeah. How long has it been?
2013.
4 years.
Yeah, long, long time.
How long have you been in India now?
3 years. Just like a couple of years. Yeah.
Is it dark already?
It's been raining a lot. So there's a depression in the Indian Ocean. So the entire south of India has been experiencing massive rains over the last few weeks. So it just gets dark very quickly.
Because what time is it now? It's what, 3?
It's 3:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Ah. Yeah, but it's already starting to get, it's very cloudy and dark and gloomy. It's like London weather.
I thought this was already quite gloomy, like in the Netherlands. It's super dark when I get up.
Oh, you're in the Netherlands?
I'm in Netherlands. Yeah. So we're in three different countries right now. Eden is in Shanghai. I'm in
Eden.
Hey, long time no see.
I don't know if you remember me, but we've like met a couple of times in the past in some parties, and of course I've seen you around.
Eden actually suggested to do the podcast with you.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, Simona was the one that mentioned about what you were up to, and I was like, oh my god, that's so interesting. Let's talk to her.
So we'll start immediately. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how would you describe yourself in one word?
Interesting. I am born and raised in India, lived across 7 cities now in India and 11 cities globally. Was interested in maths and science, so studied to be an aerospace engineer.
What?
After which I decided that, you know what, maybe I don't want to study as much. So went into consulting and flew to lots of places. I did 3 years in consulting in India, then moved to US for business school, and then I joined Nike. I was in the US office for 3 years, and then I went to Shanghai for a year and a half, post which I came back to India 3 years ago and started my own women's health company called And Me. We made products for women's health across menstruation, pregnancy, and menopause. We have now a range of 32 products just sold the company, and now the brand continues, and I went back to consulting to launch something called Digital Ventures, which has large companies launch businesses and startups of their own.
How long were you involved in And Me? Yeah. 2 years?
Three years.
Yeah. That's fast to start it up and then to sell it. Wow.
Yeah. No, India is witnessing a wave of lots of D2C companies coming in, and health and wellness is the key topic. And so we were looking for a strategic investor, and the right deal happened at the right time.
Nice.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very impressive. Can you share the 11 cities you lived in?
Yes, I was born in Agra, which is a city of the Taj Mahal, one of the 7 wonders of the world. Then moved to Delhi, Mumbai, Pune, Indore, Calcutta, Lucknow in India. Then did Boston, sometime in New York, Portland, and Shanghai.
Oh, wow, yes. Country-wise, it's India, US, and China. Yeah, you've seen a lot. Yes. Are you planning on anywhere else in the world, or is this going to be your embassy?
I mean, with COVID, it's so hard. Even like making New Year's plans has been difficult, because now I hear there is a third wave coming.
Yes.
So, staying put in India for now.
Yeah, I think probably the safest for everybody. Everybody staying put. Except for me, I should go to China. Because in China, there's no COVID.
And then Europe is just getting worse and worse and worse right now.
Yeah.
Can you tell us when you experienced your first orgasm and how that felt for you?
Great question. I mean, to be very, very honest, I was super nerdy at school. I've literally read every page, every word, multiple times. I knew everything. But somehow, in our schools, they did not ever teach the fertility, chapter. It was just like, push, no one knows, no one talked about it, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And the student was, I was like, okay, I also don't ever need to read about it, so I did. So I didn't even know what sex was, what orgasm was, till it even happened. And I don't know if I even knew what orgasm was. So I would say somewhere around when I was 22, 23, I had girlfriends and we would talk about it. And then I would also do some research. So there was this feeling which felt beyond.
Yeah.
And it remained with you. So that was, when it happened. I've always, full disclosure, I've always had one real sexual partner.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely with him. But
I think it's not even that young or that old. We've had some other guests on the show as well who also mentioned that they only discovered in their 20s. Maybe it's actually an Asian thing if I'm thinking about it. Sorry?
Yeah, like I did not know anything till 1920. Like I didn't even know how sex happened till 20.
Is that because of your cultural upbringing or is that just personal?
I mean, definitely cultural upbringing because no one, our parents wouldn't sit us down and say, let's talk about sex. It didn't happen. And not just for me, I would say for all my friends in India. That's not the conversation you have.
Yeah.
Because the typical culture is that you get married early and then you just learn it. We never had the conversations. And then, of course, my friends and my girlfriends, we also did not have as many conversations. Being in an engineering school in India, many of us did not even have boyfriends, till the 30s. It's only when we did start to, in 20s, we started talking. We had a girl gang that we could discuss all these things with. And I would say me being nerdy, India being India, and not having boyfriends in my community, in my close friends, led to me never talking about it. And I would say, I don't think even in India, the girls, like, as friends, talk about this topic.
What did you say in the end? In India?
In India, I do not think girls sit around a table and then talk about sex.
Talk about it. Is there anything in the media? Is there nothing at all that where you could go for if you would be interested to learn more about sex, like TV shows or magazines or I don't know?
There are now, of course, porn websites.
Yeah.
To the extent that you can learn from that.
Yeah.
There is starting to be these global pages that you could follow on Instagram that would talk about sex a little bit.
Yeah.
And some menstrual health companies in India do start to put in some content around like sexual pleasures and intimacy and orgasms. I think that's been the start of it, and they have been able to create some conversation around. But it's not a cultural topic. Like in movies, for example, those scenes would be highly scrutinized and won't even there. I mean, to the extent that till even 10 years ago, a man and a woman kissing in a movie would just be hidden with a flower dancing. So
you have these memes as well. And then I think it's mainly Asian kid memes. There is this like, you're watching this TV show or a film together with your parents and then there's an erotic scene comes up and you're all like, just looking away and just pretending it's not happening. Now, I feel that that's the awkwardness that you feel when you're in the room with your parents and see a sexual scene. It's just impossible.
Yeah, and we wouldn't even have so many sexual scenes to feel awkward to. We would feel awkward when there is, a TV ad around menstrual pad, for example. That's where the awkwardness happened. Oh, there's a pad on the TV, so let's switch the channel. Intimacy scene, like real sexual intimacy scene, are very far and few in the media now.
Do you see it evolving right now though? Is it like becoming more open?
I would say that is still not prime time open, but this is evolving a little bit. Mm-hmm. And of course, we are seeing more of the Western media. And we're consuming that, which is evolved. So net in terms of content consumption, yes, people have started to consume more of Western content, which just has more scenes versus the Indian content still.
So I'm very curious. You mentioned a lot about how like people in India still viewed a lot of this topic as taboo. Do you think a lot of it is because of religion, or what is it because of?
It's a very interesting question, because actually if you see religion and if you see all the old monuments and even old temples in India, they are made of stone and have beautiful carvings on them, like Ajanta, Ellora, and these temples, and they have such visualized scenes of sex. Kama Sutra came in India, was born in India.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yes. Sorry, I was a bit too enthusiastic when you mentioned that. Yes. I want to go there. Go ahead, continue.
So if you go, I mean, these are places of worship, the temples, and they would have carvings of course moon figures of men and women, different positions, and they would be like, no, see, these beautifully done. But I wouldn't say it's a religion. I think it's just how it is interpreted over the course of the years. And I don't know how it evolved, which, to be very honest, now that I'm thinking, because we were that country that talked openly a long time ago and actually wrote books about it, which are popular. But somewhere in the rigorous systems, we thought we'd keep it private, but private became a taboo thing. It was supposed to be something you learn as a form of pleasure and, you know, understanding your true bodies, but still have it indoors because you have it with that person. But I guess over the years it evolved.
That's the same in China as well. Like back in, I believe, the Song Dynasty, sex and same-sex intercourse and just the love for pleasure and music and art was also very, very popular, and it was all very accepted. Also like people of different culture and religion, but then also throughout the courses of like, you know, different dynasties up to now, you see that we're actually going back and like we're almost like backtracking our sexual history. Yeah, we're going back in time versus moving forward.
Yeah.
And why would you think, is there a parallel that you see in general? Because that's an interesting theme that is similar in both of these countries.
I don't know if I should say this, misogyny?
Yeah. Well, for me, I feel like I had read somewhere that China was pretty open about sex and sexuality, you know, in the media as well, or in media, and you would see it in carvings as well. And they had these illustrations where men were naked and having intercourse with women and very open with their type of sex toys. And then the revolution came. And then everything was just banned. Everything, like everything was about work and earning money, and everything that fell outside of work and earning money and taking care of your family, that wasn't important and wasn't being portrayed in the media at all anymore. So I think what I read, it's from that point onwards, it's kind of like no religion, no sex life, no nothing, just focus on making money. But now everybody's like, we're becoming more wealthy again and becoming more open. So, and also more connected, and therefore becoming more curious to sex and beyond.
Yeah. No, very interesting. Yeah. I mean, there's so many underlying themes that you can say. Of course, I mean, in India specifically, there was, you know, as a man and a woman, you had duties of family and working and earning money. And that was your main priority that you had to show to yourself and to family and to others. And in that construct, pleasure wasn't really a part of the you know, the set of things that you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And maybe from there it has evolved to we not talking about any kinds of pleasure to now, as you're saying, with money coming in, people are getting more aware and slowly spending time, taking vacations, spending on beauty and now spending on sex.
Yeah.
I think not just like even experiencing, I think those as a culture that we would go back to because we have earned the basic freedom and money and family.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Sheeta, you shared earlier about Kama Sutra coming from India. Is it commonly practiced in households or behind closed doors?
Yeah, no, great question again. I mean, it's so funny and ironic, and I would say it is similar to what yoga is, right? Yoga also originated in India, but for the longest time, it just got lost. And yoga was practiced much more openly and revived and rejuvenated and reinterpreted in US. And I saw much more happening in China before it has now come back to India. Similar stuff with Ayurveda, which is our ancient medicine.
Yeah.
Kama Sutra, similar story. People just know we have Kama Sutra. But how many people even know what's inside it, what is it for, what are the different types, you know, of positions to that extent, if I may call it, are talked about. I don't think even 1% of India's population really knows, because it's the books, you know, it's just now, if you see Kama Sutra, you just see like shady sex happening and it's just about, you know, positions and just going crazy. I don't think that is what Kama Sutra is supposed to be. You know, yoga is not headstands. Yoga is, you know, so it's the body and mindedness, single-mindedness, and a way to unify with the universe. So to your point, definitely it's been misinterpreted. Definitely the awareness and content around it is very low, be it in books or online. And now it's been just heavily termed as crazy sex.
Is it though? Mm. Is it? I've never made the connection to crazy sex. I've just made the connection to more sensual sex, or sex in another experience.
No, the implication is like, if you ask the normal, regular Indian, they'd be like, oh, it has like 50 plus positions and all are just like crazy ways to like get on top of each other sideways and have sex. So for my equivalent is yoga is headstands or handstands.
Yeah.
That is what you think yoga is.
Do you think it's just like with yoga, is yoga being practiced more in India or outside of India right now?
Outside of India, it's being revived, and now it is starting to again build this footing in India, but we just lost it for.
That's interesting. And then, so yoga is coming back, and then also to India. And then what about, and then I see it with Ayurveda as well, or maybe because I'm into health and wellness, but I see that there's like this surge of interest in Ayurveda, and then taking care of your wellness from the inside by looking at what you eat and drink.
Yeah.
Do you think the same is happening with Kama Sutra then?
It hasn't happened, but I am assuming that if this gets, the only way it gets, we're so afraid to talk about it. So only way, and tough topics like this are more commonly spoken in the Western world. So my sense, it hasn't happened, but I think it can happen if the Western world starts talking about it, and then we get more okay with it.
The Western world is kind of the influencers for India. Like, if the Western world start talking about it again, then India feels like, okay, we can take it on again.
The political setup that we have in India, now the way it's been interpreted, right, is just not a topic that you talk about. I mean, you can't even post content on sex on social media. I mean, Instagram blocks it, Facebook blocks it. Where would people get such content? And I'm saying, because I don't see enough people right now in India even talking about this subject openly. Yeah. But I do see this being openly talked, I guess, in US or in the Western world. So there are more chances it gets picked up here. I would be more than happy if, you know, it comes back again from India itself, and we relearn the meaning of sex and what it is for, and shame it.
What is the best kept secret in Indian culture to maintain a healthy sex life? Do you have any insights for us?
So there is this super interesting thing. So in India, and we'll have to know how much it is in China too, I'm not sure how much supposed to, but you are supposed to have sex only after you get married. So the and that's considered as a good thing in India. And of course, it's changing now drastically, but I guess for my mom's parents' generation, that was definitely true. So there was this whole culture that the first night after you get married is super critical, because that's for the very first time you see your husband, you see your wife, and then you do intercourse. And turmeric milk is a tradition that on the first night, turmeric milk, which is just literally cow milk with turmeric herb mixed in it, the man is supposed to have it to improve his potency and powers. And
you get this at brunches. You go for brunch, you get an egg benedict, and you can order a turmeric latte. But turmeric lattes are actually to improve your potency?
I think it also, milk gives you energy, turmeric might help with a few other things, but that is still a thing that happens just after your wedding, on your first night, and you're sleeping, you'll get a glass of milk with turmeric mixed in it, and the guy is the only one who's supposed to have it, in at least how the culture, tradition goes. So that's one, I was saying, I don't think any culture has it, or it's well publicized, but outside of India, but very No, I don't think we've tested it otherwise.
Okay, well, it doesn't hurt to try.
It doesn't hurt to try. Mm. Yeah, milk with turmeric.
Yeah, that's a good one. We've also read that in India, we read that a high percentage of marriages are arranged marriage, and that those are actually, when it comes to practice, that it actually works better for the couple. It doesn't come from emotion, and you know, initially in a relationship, you always have this pink glasses on, and then with an arranged marriage, you actually look at it more from a factual point of view, and in the long term, it works out better. What is your point of view on this?
True.
I had love marriage. My brother had an arranged marriage. And I would say ultimately, and I've seen both sides. Like now, there's another trend of a lot of love marriages breaking up in India, which my close friends and family. So divorces are becoming way more common in India than you would see a couple of years ago. And I feel it just comes down to expectations. When you are in, you know, when you know, as you said, Subodha, when you know the person from before, if you haven't done a live-in, you know, you have had like your dates and everything is rosy, you're putting your best foot forward, you just expect that's how life is going. I mean, this person is going to give everything.
Yeah.
But life happens, and then you have to have your routine, but your expectations don't change, you don't evolve as a person. That leads to the problem. Versus when you arrange marriage, you have zero expectations. You actually are thinking, oh my God. So any small deed that the person does makes you happy, and you grow as a married couple versus, you know, I loved myself as an unmarried couple. I love the freedom, and then you realize, oh, I'm married and I have all these expectations. So to me, it's just how, in what setting you get to know a person and the expectations that come around it. But actually on the flip side, what does happen though in arranged marriages, it's harder. If things don't work out, it's really hard to get out.
Mm.
Because arranged marriages are set up usually by families, and there's a large family intertwining. And so it gets harder, and because you don't marry yourself in India, it's very well interconnected. So it does get harder for those people to get out of it, versus if it was love marriage and it was just your decision and you can.
So people, they get out of it then, or they just stay in it and then they see it as a business relationship?
They don't see it as a business relationship. It's just life happens. They've had kids and, you know, it's just nothing. But life keeps going on.
It's not even an Indian thing anymore, or arranged versus love marriage. This also happens in real life, you know? It's like you get together and then you have some expectations, whether high or low, but eventually you're going to be together for so long. And then if you don't feel like it, but you have your kids and you've built up this life, you'll just stay in it.
Crazy. And right now we have so much exposure, right? Women are earning, men are, everyone's earning, everyone has their own futures, careers. There is no one person who's sitting and seeing it evolve. Both the people are evolving. So that makes it super complex to maintain a good relationship and having room to compromise and just learn about the other person.
Yeah.
I think what you shared earlier was super interesting about expectation, because I think with like movies and like maybe even Bollywood or shows, it portrays love as like this, oh my God, it's the best thing ever. And if you meet the right person, this person will always make you super happy, which I think is like super crazy to be implementing that thought to young kids. Like, you have to wait till you meet this person who makes you feel like fluff all the time. But like, you'll never feel like fluff with the same person for like,
forever.
Even let's say 5, 10, 20, to even like 50 years.
Yeah, and you have other aspirations, right? It's not just like I would leave everything and I'll fight my family and everyone because of this one person. I want that. But my life is more. What happens to my friends and my job and my career and my hobbies and my country? Though you're so right, Eden, on that one, the expectations that are set, the rosy picture that we set around us is does make things harder for relationships.
Yeah, and super unrealistic. Okay, so you kind of shared a lot about like, you know, how marriages are taking place in India, and you lived across 11 different cities. Can you tell us a little bit on like the impressions of different dating lives across these different cities?
Yeah. So one observation I had is in India, I feel like now some of the summits, I would remove like last 2 years, but before that, you only met your potential soulmate through a broader friend group. You first go into the friend zone, you hang as friends, and then potentially, you know, you could evolve later to be like, oh, I think you like me, I like you, same family, similar background, let's get married. You don't like actively go out and then have dates. That's not culture. I guess for safety reasons it could be, because in India, women's safety is also a key concern. Women are, we are not allowed to just go out and have dinners and meet strange men. Versus in US, it was damn interesting, is, you know, people every Friday night had like, I have a date night. Friday nights are supposed to be our dates. And that was a thing. To me, that was like, oh my God, that's like super proactive and being in charge of your life and then actually meeting different kinds of people to figure out who you like and don't like. Mm-hmm. Versus you have your friend group and it's within this friend group, and if it evolves, it evolves. If it doesn't, then arranged marriage is here to stay. So that was super interesting in, I would say, US, that I loved. And of course, so many dating apps, everything from the bagel where they'll tell you one person to friends, etc. So I don't know which one I like better, because also I still know so many of my friends who have been on dating apps and going on dates and then, you know, in mid-30s and don't have someone. But I also know so many people who did find people who are their soulmates. So, but at least you have a choice, I would say, with these apps and the ecosystem they have.
The apps, yeah, that's cool. I actually bumped into Bumble's profile on Instagram, but Bumble India. So is it are girls more open, or is there more opportunity for them to go out and date?
Yeah, no, much more. Of course, COVID came in and, you know, put a speed breaker on it in terms of physically meeting people. Yeah. But Bumble and Tinder, both of them are very active in India. And I, you know, the young generation is definitely using them, seeking them, and, you know, having fun and finding soulmates both. But for sure. Yeah.
You also mentioned just now that in India, it's a little bit, you just don't go out as a female because it's a bit more dangerous. Is the fear realistic, or is it more like coming from a generational fear where, you know, back in the days it was more dangerous to go outside, but nowadays not so much anymore?
Yeah, no, I would say banning a few cities, which are still very safe for women, and majority of, you know, the North India, there is high amount of risk in you staying up late, you coming back alone. So if you are with someone, it's great, but when you go out and meet a person, then you might have to come back alone, and late night in a public vehicle, the incident rates of rape could be high. Mm. And there have just been a series of shocking stories that have happened in the past, that majority of India, then you only go out with friends. You don't go out by yourself. But in a few cities, things have evolved. I hope more cities get there. But it's not just cultural. It is the real.
What do you think could have caused this situation? What made women so unsafe? And what made the men feel like they could just do this?
I think what made men have more power over women probably came from the fact that men went out and earned money. And they had a very, you know, dominant role in the sense that they had to take care of the family when money came in, versus when we were foragers and anyone could go out and pluck a flower. So, and women were just supposed to sit at home and then take care of family. And that evolved into, you know, an egoistic marriage that I earn and you sit at home. Mm. And then I would add the layer of poverty and just literacy. To an extent, with poor households, not literally aware, illiterate, also just leads to them not being aware and not having, you know, not being aware of the basic construct, and they're just taking what was taught and what they saw around them.
Yeah, so it's a mix of lack of education and also how there's still a lot of inequality in the households.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Did this also impact you? Because you said you started your own female wellness startup. Was this of influence for your startup? Or was it another point of view that you started your startup with?
No, the point for starting a startup was when I actually looked around. Coming from Nike, of course, health and wellness and, you know, fitness was definitely key in things I like to do. And I was sure that I wanted to do something in health and wellness, for sure. It's just when I came across women's health. What got me interested is that when I looked at my own period's history, when I spoke to my own mom about menopause, when I spoke to my own friends around PCOS, it just was startling as to the lack of solutions that existed. The only yes. thing I could do is like go to a gynae, and they would charge so many rupees, and then they'll give me some solution which could harm me for a problem that is just lifestyle based, and wouldn't educate. It's just like you have a pill. I don't know if you guys know about PCOS, it's polycystic ovarian syndrome. One in five women has it. The only gynae solution that exists here is a contraceptive pill.
Yeah, or lose weight. That's what my gynecologist told me. You need to lose weight.
I guess it works so much. One in five women has this problem, and our solutions are just so outdated. Because the research, one woman were not allowed in clinical trials in US even till 1972. I mean, isn't that crazy? Women were just not even allowed. So we don't know enough about women. And even after that, the solutions that we prescribe today are still so heritage that it doesn't solve my needs. And for simple, if you look at women's lifestyle from menstruation to pregnancy to menopause, there are 40 plus unique problems that women have and men don't. So that was the start of it. I remember speaking to my mom and mom-in-law, and when they started to hit their menopause, they would have all these symptoms.
Yeah.
And they did not know that it was because of menopause. You know, when they would speak to their friends or even their spouse, it felt like it was just old age. But mm-hmm. it's not old age, right? And there are steps that they could do to actually give a name to it and not feel so bad about, you know, the weight increase, the memory loss, the anxiety, the heat sweats, in that background. So that's the reason we thought, and the research said these are lifestyle problems, and right diet and nutrition and, you know, a set of things that you do could help solve it. So we thought, why not? No one's doing it. Let's just
do it.
We learn.
That is so inspiring.
Yeah. You took fate in your own hands. It doesn't exist. Let me just do it. I'll do it.
Yeah.
And I used to I was like, I don't have any loans. I mean, I'm still young. What's the worst that could happen? This won't work. But I learned so much, and I'll do something that I'm proud of.
Yeah.
Day to day. So, yeah, that was one thing that kept us going. All the customer reviews I think probably you guys would have the same thing, but just a customer coming in and saying, you know what, your product was so good, and I wish something like this existed. I think that just like makes up any day. You have no money, doesn't matter. I was like, this review.
Yeah. Yeah, helping someone, definitely. What is have you seen any shocking or interesting or challenging insights or anecdotes from when you started a company?
Yeah, so the first one was actually thought the product that we were building was for, say, a rich woman who is very into health and wellness. I thought she's the one who's going to buy my product. What we saw the data told us is interesting. It's the women in the lower tier cities who are more in the middle income range segment. Those are the ones buying more of our products.
Wow.
And why that happened actually shook me, and it was a key insight, is that women in tier one and the top metro cities, they have access to doctors. They have access to a lot more information. They could actually seek it out. Versus women in these tier two cities, they don't have access to this information of the doctor. So when they see a product online in a safe environment on their cell phones that they can easily just they can chat with us, they can ask questions,
yeah,
and they can easily order with a click and get the product delivered, try, test it, return it. That's what they were looking for. It was super interesting, and it shifted the way we thought of who the real consumer is and, you know, how we should target, both in terms of content and placement. But it's super good. It's because no one, it depends on who was talking and what options were available.
So with the topic of periods and sexual wellness still being quite a topic that people don't talk about in India, when you launched the company, did you have any pushback?
No, again, great question. With respect to women's health, there wasn't any pushback per se. What we did do is we had some trouble in getting some of the keywords, for example, approved on Facebook and Instagram, but we lived through it. We knew the problem existed and they're looking for solution. Like that we knew before starting. So one way for us to sell was to through interaction. So you could chat with us before buying. And I think that helped in slightly the taboo part in, you know, someone, we couldn't sell the product, for example, in stores. So that was a taboo. We initially thought we would launch the product and put it in stores so you can go to a grocery store and find the products. It was even like teas, drinks. And we realized, one, no customer was willing to talk to my sales representative, because as soon as he asked about periods, women, men, everyone was like, I'm not here to talk about it. Yeah. No one wanted to pick up the product which said period drink on it because taboo. So we struggled to sell offline a lot. We thought it was a sales team problem. We thought it was a distribution problem, but it just never worked. But online, on the other hand, because you're in the ease and comfort of your house and your phone is your own phone, that's when it started picking up. So it was still taboo to that extent, but online digital helped.
Mm. Yeah, we see the same thing. Oh, more in Asia than in we're selling a little bit in Europe as well. In Europe, I feel nobody really has any problems with it. Also, if you go into a store, people will pick it up. People really don't care. But in Asia, I feel they're more private. And they wouldn't, like, we've also did a couple of offline events, right? And then the girls come by and they're pretty shy. And they pick up the product and then they put it back though. And then they'll come back later and they buy it online from the store. Or if they have questions, they go into the store and chat. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's definitely, but I do like how your packaging is that, I mean, and how the design is, it doesn't like shout penis.
Yes.
Which is when it would be like, oh my God, I don't even want to see it.
Yeah.
You know, even like the inside packaging for you to like travel with it, you know, the way it is, it's not see-through, it has the shine. But I think that also makes it easy for me to travel with. I mean, carry it outside or just keep it, you know, in a public space.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just found that super helpful.
That's nice. Good to hear. Coming to one of the last questions that we have here, we know there's a big taboo in sex, self-pleasure, and intimacy, while can have such great benefits to overall health and relationships. What do you think we can do to make others feel comfortable talking and discussing about these topics with friends and partners, or even online?
Yeah, no, this is such, and I felt like even for me, it's been a journey, to be very honest. Like 20s, when I learned about, you know, this, there is something like this, which is so powerful. I mean, that time it was just, it meant like men and dating and relationships. And then I got married, and then, you know, I got married to the person I was together for 8 years, and things fell down. It felt like, you know, sex was not even important because we have something more meaningful and amazing.
Yeah.
But then recently, I mean, I started reading about it. I don't know why. I guess it's because of your product and just, you know, a couple of shows that have come up. And it feels like sex is not, you know, why did it help build a relationship isn't to find that perfect person, you know, to like, if I can have great sex with this person, I want to get married. I think it was beyond, you know, you learn about yourself.
And yeah.
You learn about the other person. How do you make efforts to, you know, keep it exciting? Like, why do I eat different kinds of food? Like, isn't it as similar as that I want to evolve in my food habits and my sex habits and still keep it interesting and engaging, because that's a part of the body.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, do I get tickled? I mean, it's a it's a curiosity thing. And I feel that positioning shifted something. It wasn't like, oh, I do this because, you know, I want to be sexually active for, you know, just because I have sexual needs, but to actually learn more about the body and be curious about the other person's body and understand touch and intimacy. And that has been, like, learning more, I think, is something that has definitely help me get the taboo out. It's not very easy. It's not, do you know yourself? Do you know what?
And putting a little bit of the scientific part into it, or the studious part, like learning about yourself, learning about your body.
Yeah, like why don't we feel like we should know those parts of the body? Like, I mean, has anyone looked at the vagina? I mean, it's like a first example, but have we? And do we know what it is? We care about our skin and hair and everything. We should. Now, it's a hard thing to teach people because people still have taboo. But I do feel somewhere women feel the desire that, you know, they're unsatisfied, you know? Yeah. And so I have, like, somewhere deep inside a serious telling me, if someone gives me the right information, which I can understand privately, I would love to know it. Nowadays even evolved men feel like they could do more beyond the three positions that they saw, or like the three things that they saw in the regular media or porn websites. So it hitting that seed would be the key thing.
Learning part. I like it a lot.
We just need to continue to nudge them a little bit by little bit. I think for us four, we're also learning as we go. We're always learning new things or new tricks or new ideas. Even for us now, like, we just launched the four tests you should take to kind of make your relationships better. We just launched that yesterday. Even just by doing those little tests, I was like, oh, I had no idea I had that sexual trait. Yeah. Or like my personality is like that. And then sharing that with my partner, he was also like, oh, I kind of saw hints, but I wasn't sure. So I think it's always like just finding new ways to better the relationship, better yourself, and not be out of touch and not give up. I think people oftentimes feel like they just give up or be like, oh, it is just the way it is.
Yeah,
but exactly. That's the problem. Yeah. Like, I don't want to take the effort to like think new things, or man should do it, or woman should think of new ideas.
What is one piece of advice that you would all girls and women out there to know, especially now with all of the experience that you have with your startup, living in different cities, knowing different cultures?
Oh, that's a heavy loaded question.
Or maybe just from your startup as well, because you've been working with females so much and female health, maybe on the health part.
Yeah, no, I think one thing what I learned definitely as part of being at Antmi was that we sometimes don't think through and sit down. And I think every woman should sit down like once a quarter or once a year and think through their hair, skin, menstrual health, and, you know, as sexual health. Like, do we sit down and write? Because all the tests that you do would just help you with, they all only help you with medicine. But if you're skin is bad, if your hair is bad, if your periods are not on time, if you are, you know, not feeling excited, energized, I think those are the things, these are good indications for you to fix either your diet or your lifestyle or your relationships with people. Do that, like take a score check every quarter or every 6 months. A year, I think, is too long. And just decide that. And second, I mean, we used to talk a lot about nutrition is... especially in India, because that's not taken care of well, is sit down with your diet and see how many macro and macro, micro and macronutrients you're having, but people just are not eating good stuff enough.
That is so scientific from you. Not scientific, you're sitting down and cut. No, I think it's very good. Like, have your, like, a yearly resolution list and do that for your sex and intimate life. Like, I never thought about that. That's like, is that the consulting way of thinking? Like, very goal oriented, set a plan. I actually never thought about it. For me, it was also just like, it comes and goes and I'll see how it goes. But actually, no, you need to sit down and plan it out for yourself. And you need to look at what you've already been doing and see how you can improve on that, both on the intimate side, but also on, the food side.
Because if you don't think through it, I mean, time passes more quickly than we realize. 2019 went away, 2020 went away, COVID is just accelerating how time passes. So if we don't take out the time, if we have like these buddies of like, have like amazing girlfriends, I think that's like, maybe like that's the one I would say. Figure out your girlfriend group. I mean, no matter how many men, boys, husbands that you have in life, I think nothing can replace having your girlfriend group that you can just share thoughts, anything with.
I love this.
If you don't
totally have, agree,
you'll definitely are missing something. Like, figure it out, make a gang, start a gang.
Yes.
Join a gang. But at every stage of life, you need it.
So would that be your favorite self-love quote, or what would be your favorite self-love quote?
Something that you tell yourself every day when you get out of bed.
I've been reading a lot of philosophy lately, and what it does say is scientific, but all of us, literally all of us, are constituted in such different ways. I mean, my brain is not same as you. I mean, no two brains are same. Mm-hmm. And that means what I bring to the table and how I think is different from how anyone else thinks, and what I can add is very different too. So know that about yourself and know why you're there, because sometimes we feel either imposters or we feel like we don't do enough. But just try to find that real you, because that's your special, and meditate if that helps, or masturbate if that helps, but find the
yes.
You're special. Find yourself.
That's a good one. If people want to know more about you, Sheeta, where can they find you? I think we're now at the end of the episode. I think we've asked all of our questions, right, Eden? Any questions?
Yep.
All right. So if our guests are interested in anything of you, where can they find you?
Instagram, Sheeta Mittal on Instagram. And then they can DM me.
We'll put it in the show notes as well. Adasanso official show notes.
Thank you, Sheeta.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, you guys. I mean, of course, I know the time and energy that it takes to actually take out time to structure this and do this and plan it and coordinate it. And with everything going on in the business, hats off to all the efforts that you're putting in.